there, everybody. You are listening to This Show Is So Gay. I'm your host, Ken Schneck. This is episode number 342. As always, you can get in touch with us by dropping us a line, send an email on over to ken@thisshowisogay.com. Stroll on over to thisshowisogay.com to learn all about the fun things happening with our little gay radio show that could. You can follow us on Twitter. The handle is thisshowisogay. And of course, go on over to that Facebook, type in This Show Is So Gay, like us, because we sure as heck like you. What a show we have for you this week. We must get started with our guest. Noah Michelson is the executive editor of Queer Voices at the Huffington Post. Noah received his MFA in poetry from New York University, and his poems have been featured in The New Republic, The Best American Erotic Poetry from 1800 to the Present, and many other publications. Before joining the Huffington Post, Noah served as the senior editor at Out Magazine, and he's also contributed to Details and Black Book, and served as a commentator on CNN, BBC, Fusion, Inside Edition, and SiriusXM, among tons of other outlets. He is also the co-host of HuffPost Love and Sex, a podcast that seeks to redefine the way we talk about, yes, you guessed it, love and sex. He's a fellow NYU Violet, he's my tattoo idol, and heck, he's even been compared to a gay Kanye, and now he's here with us. Noah, welcome to This Show Is So Gay.
That was quite the introduction. Thank you so much. I'm really happy to be here.
It's been a few years. We have much to catch up on, and that's just the past week.
Yeah, let's do it. Let's get right into it.
Well, before we talk about the name change, because we're going to talk all about the name change, let's step back for a second. What would you say that you and everybody over there are trying to do with the Huffington Post Queer Voices section? What is your ultimate goal?
Yeah, I think that our ultimate goal has always been, since day one, the moment that we launched, to have as many voices talking about as many issues as articulately and passionately as possible. So whether that's the editorial staff ourselves, or whether that's our huge, huge roster of bloggers, or that's people we're interviewing, we want to feature as many different people and as many different experiences as we can.
How would you say that's evolved since that day one?
I think it just continues to get more dynamic and richer and richer every year. More people find out about us. More people want to tell their stories. You know, the thing that we've seen over the last 5 years since we launched is that what really matters in trying to get people to change their minds about the queer community and what they think we are and who they think, you know, how we live our lives is personal stories. So if we can tell our personal stories, if we can say what it's like to be us and to live in this society, it's a lot harder once you meet someone and you say, oh, you're not like I thought you were.
Right.
And it really changes the way that people think about who we are. So that's kind of at the heart of everything we do. And we always want to have a personal story, even if we're talking about policy, even if we're talking about legal issues. Who's it affecting? Who's bringing about the change and why? That's what we're really trying to concentrate on.
What does a typical day look like over there? Not so much last week, but maybe a typical day. I don't even have a sense of, all right, so you walk in the morning and you have a ton of submissions waiting for you. Do they come in all throughout the day?
So the lucky thing about the blogs is that we have a blog team, and they handle all the blogs for me. So they're kind of interfacing with me and letting me know what new blogs have been published, what we have coming up. So that's sort of taken care of for me. So this morning I came in, I got in around 8 a.m. I took care of some email from the weekend. I started to look at stories. You know, we look around the internet and see what happened over the weekend or what happened since yesterday. Start to figure out what stories we want to start this morning. And then, you know, we'll have a whole bunch of different meetings. I have a podcast taping today. I have a department meeting where I meet with other people from the site to talk about what we want to do across the entire newsroom. And in the meantime, you know, the other editors who are from Queer Voices are looking for more stories. They're writing up interviews they've done. They're packaging stories. They're putting it out on social media. So the great thing about this job is that every single day, even though it's kind of the same idea, you never know what you're going to walk into. You never know what story is going to break. You never know what you're going to want to write up. And it really keeps you on your toes.
Oh, my gosh. I'm exhausted just hearing that whole description and feel like I should do more with each of my days. How do you decide yourself when you are going to pen a piece?
You know, I don't have as much time now that I'm overseeing, because I also oversee about 7 or 8 other sections too. So most of my time is spent on Queer Voices, but I'm overseeing the whole Voices department. So I don't have a ton of time to write. Usually when I write is when I'm pissed off, or when I see something happening and I think that there's a spin that's not out there. So, you know, a couple weeks ago, there was the whole drama between Kanye West and Amber Rose.
Right.
And she was talking about him and anal play, and he had to tweet out and say he's never done anal play before. And I was like, that seems like a moment to talk about homophobia, sexism, about how our culture feels about sex, especially anal sex. And so, you know, I found the time. I carved out an hour, and I went into one of our one of the rooms we have here, and I just sat down for an hour, and I banged something out. So it's usually when it's an issue that matters to me personally, or I think I can kind of add something to it, but I don't get to write as much as I used to. I miss it. I love the writing part of it.
We love your writing. We love when you get angry and put something out there. You mentioned the Other Voices section. Talk to me about intersectionality, about how we do crossover between these different sections.
It's really important, and I think that's something, you know, that we'll talk more about in a minute when we talk about Queer Voices, but none of our identities exist on their own. So, yes, I am a queer man and I'm a gay man, but I'm also a white gay man and I'm a cisgender gay man. And, you know, I have all these different identities, and especially when you're talking about queer people of color, talking about queer women of color, queer trans women of color. So all these different identities really make up who these people are. And none of them exist in their own silo, so to speak. They cross over, and the experiences and the interests and the struggles and the triumphs, but so many different communities so often intertwine, and I think it's really important to address these kind of struggles as looking at how all marginalized people can gain from that. So, yeah, we do have a women's section. We have a Black Voices section. We have a Latino Voices section. We have a parents section. And, you know, you'll see a lot of the stories that we run on the site end up on a lot of those different sections. So if it's about, you know, a Black queer parents, it's probably going to end up being in all three sections there. And that's really exciting to me, because that means that not only are we featuring a lot of content that's speaking to a lot of different populations and communities, but it also means that we're getting to work internally with each other too. And we do that. You know, it's Black History Month right now, so Black Voices has some incredible content. And a lot of it's been queer, so it's been really cool to work with them and see what they're putting out there. And, you know, we really think that one struggle should be everyone's struggle. How can I sort of sit back and be happy with my life if I know that all these other people are not, you know, don't have the same rights that I do, don't have the same dignities and humanities that I've been given. So it's really important, I think.
You make it seem like intersectionality is important.
It is.
There you go.
It's hugely important.
There you go. All right. Well, we've danced all around it. Let's get right into it. It strikes me that it's important to start a few years back when you all sat around a table and said, all right, I think we're going to start with the name Gay Voices. Is that a fair place to start?
It is. That is a very fair place to start. You know, when we launched the section, it was 2011, and you know, the thing that I keep saying is that it was actually a very radical move for Ariana to decide that she was going to have an entire section devoted just to queer content. In 2011, no other mainstream website of its size, of our size, was doing that. And so that was really exciting. And the Huffington Post had already been having so much content that was queer. It just didn't have a home, really. It just existed all over the place. And so trying to figure out a name, it was decided we would go with Gay. And there was something at that time, I think, I've said this before, I've written about this, there's something kind of radical about seeing that word on the Huffington Post.
Yeah.
And it was instantly recognizable, and you knew what you were getting into immediately. And even at that time, you know, we talked about LGBT voices, and it's hard to believe, but a lot of people, especially a lot of non-queer people and a lot of people living in the middle of America, didn't even really know what that term meant.
Yeah.
And so we were afraid to use that term and not have people really understand. So, and I wanted to use Queer Voices from the beginning, but we thought that that word was too loaded and really scary at the time. So we went with Gay Voices. And my hesitations were that, you know, gay doesn't speak to a lot of people. And over the last 5 years, I've had so many people say, I love the content you're doing. I love, you know, your section, but I'm not gay. I'm trans and I'm straight, or I'm bisexual, or, you know, all these other identities that it makes no sense to call it Gay Voices. So that was really, you know, fast forward 4.5 years later, we're finally at a point where everyone agreed it was time to have a much more inclusive name. And that's how we came upon Queer Voices.
Can you break it down even further? What type of process do you have to go through? Because it strikes me that it's enormous to rename an entire section. What does that even look like? Do you have to just drop in Ariana's office? How much okay do you need to get for this?
I mean, I had to get everything had to be okay. And I did drop into her office, but not just once. I dropped into her office many times over the last 4 years you know, sort of pitched this to her. And she is also from an older generation, and she's not queer herself. And that word meant something to her, that it was an evolution for her as well. But it's not, you know, it wasn't just talking to her. It was also me talking to the heads of a lot of different groups. And saying, what would you think if we renamed ourselves Queer Voices? You know, talking to GLAAD and places like that. And then talking to just other people, you know, talking to a trans woman I know who lives in Baltimore and asking her what her thoughts were on it. And talking, you know, to all kinds of different groups of people and saying, what do you think? And some people thought it was, you know, not a good idea. And some people were like, yes, this is so overdue. So a lot of conversations happened. That's the thing, too, is I think some people think we just decided last Monday that we were going to change the name, and that happened. You know, no, we had to rebrand this. We had to change all of our social accounts. We had to have our tech team roll everything over. It took months and months. This wasn't something that we thought about flippantly or lightly. It's something I've been thinking about every single day since I started this section.
I would imagine you had to change some business cards out there.
I haven't even changed my business cards yet. You're right. I hadn't even thought of that, and I will have to. Yeah.
I'm here to help. I am
Thank
here
you.
To help. There's LinkedIn that has to change. There's a lot that needs to go into this. Now,
True.
I would imagine that part of the conversation was anticipating the feedback that you were going to get. And as you tried to wrap your mind around it, was it what you anticipated? Was it something different? How do you even forecast that and then compare it to reality?
You can't. And you're right, though. I did try to think about what the reaction would be. And I knew that there would be some people who would be upset. And when I say upset, I didn't know actually how to qualify that word. I didn't know if they'd be angry or if they would be hurt or, you know, what it would be. But I knew that I know that the word queer is controversial. And I know that people have big feelings about it, no matter how you slice it. The response that we've gotten so far is not exactly what I expected.
Okay.
It seems to be, to me, most of the people who have an issue with the word are older, cisgender gay men. And the response that I've heard the most, and I did not expect this, is you hate gay men, you're homophobic, and you're trying to erase gay men from history. And that is not something that even entered into my mind in any way, shape, or form. Because I am a gay man.
Right.
And I think people forget that queer is a way to classify. It can also be an identity, and it can also be a, you know, a political identity, and it is for me as well. But it's like saying, I'm a lion, but I'm not a feline. You know what I mean? Like, queer is like the feline. Like, there are different things, and so you can be a tabby cat, and you can be a lion, and you can be all these different things, but you're still a feline. And so that's how I think about queer, too. I'm still a gay man, even though I'm queer. But queer is a way to classify all these different people and include all of us who have a gender or sexual minority. And so this isn't about an attack on gay men. This isn't about trying to bleach or erase the history of gay men. I think that if anything, gay men have it a lot easier than a lot of the other groups under that umbrella. And have a lot more representation in society, in culture, in Hollywood, in politics, in business. So I don't want gay men to feel like we're leaving them out. And that makes me sad. Yeah. But I don't think it's the reality. And so it's hard for me to sort of wrap my mind around that because, you know, I have people saying to me, writing me emails and saying, I think you're being too inclusive. Why do you need to be that inclusive? And that kind of stops me in my tracks. The minute someone's argument is you're being too inclusive,
right. I
have a hard time continuing down that line of logic because that makes no sense to me. We can't be too inclusive. And all these groups have been left out. And I can't tell you how many people have come up to me and emailed me and posted comments saying, thank you, finally, I feel like I'm a part of this page, and I wouldn't blog for you before because I'm not gay, and I didn't feel like I could do that, and now I do. So, you know, that makes me feel really good.
Yeah. Yeah, it's interesting. I'm sure I could have anticipated, had I been sitting at that table, you know, people saying, oh, it was a negative word, and it was a word used to bully. What I would have anticipated, which maybe you're seeing this, I'm sure you are, way more than I am, queer to me is a very political word as well. Yeah. And I'm not seeing as much responses based on that. I figured people would say, oh, you know, it's about more than just an identity. It's also about movement in some way. Are you seeing those responses a lot more? Because I'm not really seeing them.
Not at all. People are really, really hung up just on the word itself and the fact that it's been used as a slur. And why would you want to use a slur? So much of the response that I'm seeing on the negative end, it seems like it's coming from a very, very emotional place.
Right.
And that people haven't gotten beyond that yet. And I understand that. You know, I had a very tough childhood because I was queer. And I wasn't the kind of queer where it was like I could hide it. I was very, very stereotypically flamboyant and gay. And, you know, I've written about this publicly many times, but the kind of thing where my early teenage years, you know, were awful, and I was pushed down flights of stairs, and I would go home at night and stand at the top of my basement steps and try and convince myself to throw myself down the steps so that I could break bones so I wouldn't have to go to gym class. And, you know, I was suicidal.
Yeah.
At the same time, I think that we, you know, there is something so empowering about taking back that language and saying, actually, that word doesn't have to mean that, especially when we're talking about queer. Queer, for the last 30 years, has been used to talk about the community in so many ways. We have queer film festivals. We have queer studies in universities.
Yeah.
We have Queer Eye for the Straight Guy. So that's the other thing, is I think people, you know, I'd understand if we had decided to just take this word and there was no context and no history to it, and we were just going to use the slur to represent all people. That's not the case. And that word hasn't been a slur for so many of us for so long that I think sometimes I just want to say, and maybe this is unfair, but I want to say, you can't stay locked in that pain forever.
Right.
And you have to find a way to move on. Otherwise, where does that leave you? And so if other people are saying, no, this word means something else now, and not only does it mean something else, but it's incredibly empowering and it's incredibly inclusive, I would hope you'd be able to, you know, put aside that pain, still honor it, still respect it, keep it as a part of your journey, but understand that you can't stay trapped there forever.
Yeah.
And that's where I'm at, sort of.
I'm so excited. I have this response all planned out when people say, but queer is political. And I have my response ready to say, but so is being gay. But nobody's giving me the chance to use it. Noah, it's getting a little annoying.
I know. It's so true. And part of me, you know, a lot of this too last week was me trying to navigate how much I wanted to respond to people and how much I didn't. Because, you know, when people email me, I respond usually to every single email. I'm on Twitter all the time. I'm on Facebook. But it gets to a point where you can't logically talk about something like this because it is so emotional. So I'm not sure how much more energy I'm going to put into this this debate, really.
Yeah.
We made the decision. It took a long time to make. We talked to lots of people. And I'm sleeping soundly at night.
You know
what I mean? This is not something that I feel guilty or badly about.
Did it change your song before bed last week?
Did it? I think maybe I didn't even do a lot of them last week because I will say it was a very emotional week for me last week. And this job is a weird job because 98% of the time, even though we're writing about really awful things a lot of times that are happening to queer people and there's so much emotion, 98% of the time I'm fine and I have very thick skin and it rolls off my back. But there are a couple times a year where something happens and it does. It makes me have to rethink everything. I think that's a good thing, by the way.
Oh, but, absolutely.
You know, it can be a little rough. And last week was a little bit rough.
Yeah. Now, were I to conference call in my mother, which I'm not ruling out, that could be a new segment that I would love. Honestly, I think I'm going to start doing that. So I had this conversation with my mother the other day, which was really nice that this forced a different type of conversation than I've ever had with her before. You know, I've written a couple pieces for you all, and it would be under this header.
Yeah.
And her immediate response was you know, I'm not even sure how to categorize it. You know, it was really difficult for her to wrap her mind around. Mm. I'm comfortable having this conversation with yep. gay men who feel somehow marginalized, which let's talk about that another week because I really have some issues there. But it was a little bit more difficult to talk about it with a straight woman who yeah. just has a whole different association with it. It's not a word that she's ever been called. Yeah. And also, you know, it's my mom, so there's that dynamic. If we were to conference call her in, any tips on what I would say to her?
You know, it is interesting, too, because I have some other non-queer people who are saying, oh, can I use that word? Is that even a word I'm allowed to use?
That was not what my mother said. Let me just put that out there.
But it is. When you start to talk about non-queer people and that word, too, I think you're right. I think for a lot of queer people, it's a whole new thing. So I guess before we even get there, is the thing that is most exciting to me about what's happening, and I was thinking about this last night, actually, is that I'm seeing so many conversations now
yeah.
about the word queer.
Yeah.
And it's not something that we talk about. And you know what happens when you start with the conversation about the word? You really quickly have to move then from the word to what the word means, to why it's being used, to who's using it. And you get wrapped up in this, you know, it's kind of like the most beautiful conversation you can have because you're thinking about the community. You're thinking about people's identity. We don't do that ever, really. So I guess that's sort of the gift that came out of this for me. Because my goal is always to be starting conversations on the site, I just think about how many people in the last week have been talking about that word and saying, whoa, I didn't know we could even use that, or, oh, I didn't know that wasn't a slur, or, you know, all these different things. So I think that's where you start with someone who's not queer and has questions about it is, you know, here's the history of the word. Yep, at one point it could be used as a slur, but in the 80s and 90s, queer people started to say, you know what, we don't think this is a bad thing. And they started to use it for all different reasons. And it's still kind of controversial in some ways, but for a lot of people, it's just a done deal, and it's just how they are able to talk about who they are and in allowing as many people as possible to be part of that family. So I don't think there's any kind of like specific script that you have to use, but I think if you just start having a really honest conversation, you can do it. And that's why when we launched and I wrote that piece about why we were changing the name, I also put some resources at the end from like PFLAG. Even MTV had a great piece about the word queer. The internet is your friend, you know what I mean? Like, go online and spend some time just reading both sides. And I don't think we can ever be in a bad place when we're getting more voices and more experiences added to the table.
But what I hear you saying is that after this call, you are going to call my mom and have that conversation?
I would love to.
Okay.
Hook us up. I will school her, of course.
If you could throw in the whole tattoos are okay conversation, that would be great, too. And you could just do a big catch-all.
You know what? Baby steps, I think. Let's not overwhelm her.
It makes me think about, it's so crazy to think about a school like NYU. I remember, you know, when I started there in 1995 yeah. and their biggest LGBT student group and still is called Queer Union. For
yeah.
them to be using that even in 95, and it predates that by quite a few years, to look at what happened last week with this rebranding just
yeah.
makes you look at some of these organizations and say, holy crap, how did you do that 30
oh,
years
yeah.
ago? Yeah,
for sure. It's the same thing. And when I was at my college, too, it was called Queer Union. And you think about, wow, that you were so ahead of your time. But it's changing more and more. Someone else just told me the other day that the Seattle Gay and Lesbian Film Festival just renamed themselves the Seattle Queer Film Festival. So I think we're going to be seeing more of it. And also, if you talk to millennials, if you talk to people who are under, like, 40, it's just really not a big deal
yeah.
at all.
Yeah.
And, you know, some people say, well, that means that we're erasing our older generations and we don't care about them and all that thing. It's just like, no, you know, language changes.
Yeah.
And language doesn't exist in a vacuum. And the context and the meaning that we give to words, you know. I was just reading the other day about the word hussy and how hussy used to mean housewife. And now it means something totally different. You think about the word awful. Awful used to mean full of awe.
Yeah.
And now it means the exact opposite. And, you know, there's all these different, nothing is static. And we have to just be able to understand why something is being used the way it is.
can we just be crystal clear as we leave this part of the conversation?
Yeah.
You guys are proud of your decision, which that we know for sure. I think let's just settle those folks out there who think, well, gosh, if we get a certain amount of likes on one particular post, it's going to change Noah's mind.
Right.
Can we put that to rest?
We can put it to rest. Like I said, this was years in the making. This was not a decision that happened lightly. So, and it's also something that I believe in and that we believe in. So this, you know, people were saying too, why didn't you poll your readers to find out what they wanted? Well, you know, when you run a publication, it's about your editorial vision sometimes too. So we didn't want to poll people. We think that this is the best word and we're going to stand behind that. So I appreciate all the feedback and I really am happy people are talking about it. But no, I don't have any plans on changing it.
There you go. Let's put that to rest. Let's cover quickly HuffPost Love and Sex, where you talk about things that are different than things that I talk about.
I do. It's actually our year anniversary right now. We've been on our podcast. We do it twice a month. And it's incredible. Sex is something that I'm very, very interested in, both as just a gay man, but also I think as just a human being. And I don't think like the word queer, and I don't think we talk about sex enough.
Right.
And I think that being able to have smart, open, honest conversations about our desires and who we are and who we want to be with, I love that. And it's an honor for me, actually, to get to talk to people. And, you know, the show is kind of anthropological in that we talk to real people and experts, and we try and get a 360-degree view of any one issue. And it's an honor for me to have people open up about their lives. We just did one about being sober and having sex and what happens when your entire life you've been drunk or you've been on meth or anything else every time you've had sex, and what happens then suddenly when you get sober and you have to have sex. And, you know, to have people talk to us and tell us about their lives and really be so candid, it's pretty, pretty cool.
Yeah.
I feel honored.
Yeah. I've listened to a lot of podcasts in my, you know, 7+ years doing this show, and it doesn't always happen as it happens with you all doing HuffPost Love and Sex, that you can actually hear you guys being engaged. It sounds like you're enjoying doing it and you're engaged. You're not just filling up airtime, which is really enjoyable to listen to.
Yeah, thank you for that. You know, I would say the podcast is one of my favorite parts of my job. Because I'm really interested in telling stories, my own stories or other people's stories. So, yeah, I feel like what's the point in doing it if I'm not going to be engaged and, you know, just filling air. So it's exciting. We have another one coming up. It comes out on Thursday, and we just did sort of a Ask Me Anything, where we have this woman, Dr. Jana, who teaches sexuality at NYU. And a couple times a year, she'll come in and we'll just ask our readers to send us all of their questions. And then we just go through and answer about 10 of them. So, you know, this week it was everything from, you know, what's a golden shower and is it safe, to a couple who's been married for 10 years and is no longer having sex and doesn't know what to do about it. So lots of different questions, lots of different experiences, and usually there's something for everyone.
Yeah, we talk about different things on our podcast, Noah. We just
do.
It's a good thing.
Do. Yeah.
Last but not least, for all of our aspiring writers out there, what advice do you have to give to them? It's such a different age of publishing and getting people's voice out there.
Yeah.
What's that seminal piece of advice where people should start if they want to write that compelling argument and get their voice out there?
I think it really is using your own experiences to talk about the world around you. You know, you have a voice, you have a vision, you have a point of view, and use it. I think that's what sets people apart. I think especially in this era now of social media, and especially in the way it can be so narcissistic, and everyone wants to be famous, and everyone wants to be seen. But I think so often a lot of that is based on almost nothing. You know, it's a selfie that you're taking or something. So if you actually have a point of view about something and you have a way to put it into words, that's so much more powerful to me. So, you know, tell me about why you're choosing the candidate that you're choosing, but frame it in a way that is really evocative and really talks about something that you've experienced, because chances are people are going to be able to relate to that. And if they aren't, then they're going to learn something new about an experience that they never knew existed. So the more open, the more honest you can be, I think the better the writing's going to be.
There it is. Noah Michelson is the executive editor of Queer Voices at the Huffington Post. Everybody can stroll on over to huffingtonpost.com, and right there on Voices, you can click on Queer Voices. Noah, I love what you guys are doing over there for so many years now, and you have forced some conversations that I think are really important to have. And yes, I think you've done really well at highlighting to people that the loudest voices are not always the most important voices. And you know for sure, but I've certainly seen it posted all over the interweb, that there are hordes and hordes of people who feel like their voice is now represented. So you guys are doing some great stuff over there.
Thanks, Ken, and thanks for having me. I always love chatting.
HuffingtonPost.com. Everybody go check out Queer Voices. Noah, always a treat.
Thank you.
I spent all night chasing after some bloke who turns out to be mad. Like, really mad. Really mad. Really mad.
All right, folks, and we are back. Well, we have tons of time left on this week's episode to talk all about the latest LGBT news that's out there. We will get to politics. We will get to the primaries. We will get to Marco Rubio and his very uncomfortable interaction with a gay patron in an establishment in New Hampshire. But we're going to start with some news that you might not have heard about, because we have to highlight that these things are still happening. These things are still happening. In Tennessee, a group of students at Franklin County High School in Tennessee, they want a safe environment to talk about issues affecting the gay community, especially bullying, so they started a club that invited people of all sexual orientations to do so. They started a gay-straight alliance. It's found in variations in high schools across America, but to many parents in the Franklin County schools, they are no better, I swear to you, than terrorists. That is one of the comparisons that has been made there in the Nashville area of Tennessee. At a school board meeting this week, resident Robert Wittelick took to the microphone and said he doubted the group's agenda, and he claims they're trying to impose on people who attend their meetings, they're trying to change them to gay. You know, because that's what we do. He said this, quote, "There's really no place for discussion of sexual orientation in a public high school." Dozens of supporters stood up, cheered, and waved towels and signs after this gentleman shared his opinion at the meeting. A social media page created last month called for school board members to move the club off campus. And a station there in the Tennessee area reports that one parent on Facebook compared the Gay-Straight Alliance to, you guessed it, ISIS. And by the way, if you guess that, you have some issues that we should discuss, because how could you guess that? How could you guess the comparison between a gay-straight alliance found in high schools across the country and ISIS? Jenny Turrell, the faculty advisor for the organization, said this, quote, "We have a complicated county, and we have lots of differing points of views and valid views and powerful views on both sides of the conversation." Franklin County Schools Director Amy Lonis said the organization, which was created to promote tolerance and acceptance, followed the proper procedure to establish the club. Students say it was really largely done in response to bullying. The group was granted approval to form by school officials in December, and that Franklin Schools County Director said this, quote, "It's a safe environment for students to get together and just talk." While the Gay-Straight Alliance was allowed to form, some critics said that no organized meetings were held before members of the community began to question its motives and intent. The school did not make a decision about whether to keep allowing the club to meet, so it will continue to meet normally. Meanwhile, officials are looking through the policies for creating clubs on schools. District officials said because of federal funding, they cannot decide to ban the Gay Straight Alliance. The only option would be to ban all clubs. This is what we are spending our time on in the educational system. Look, I'm a professor of education. I actually do have a day job. I wish I did this radio show 24/7. It's not what I do. Noah Michelson, I love what he does 24/7. That's great stuff. I have a day job. It's being a college professor. I often talk about that intersection of education and sexual orientation. And for people to stand up and say, yeah, these things just shouldn't come up at all, I think you're denying what students are actually talking about in the hallways, in their health classes, in the locker rooms, on the playground, you know, everywhere. Because we actually live in a society where sexual orientation comes up. And to say that we can't provide a safe place for that to be talked about in an officially sanctioned club that's, you know, not ISIS, because that's a crazy comparison. Gay Straight Alliances to ISIS, that would be silly and insulting on so many levels. To say that we can't provide this safe space for students to have these conversations, that's ludicrous. It's ludicrous and it's harmful. Because we see across the board, GLSEN, the Gay and Lesbian Straight Education Network, puts out these stats every single year. And students who are in schools where there is no Gay Straight Alliance, where there is no faculty member who is supportive of LGBT students, where they are in a school that doesn't have policies that protect for sexual orientation, gender identity, gender expression, those students across the board, it's statistically significant, those students across the board say, we feel less safe. We experience more bullying. This is data-driven observations here. It's not just me spouting off sitting in a room in a radio studio in Cleveland, Ohio. This is according to every stat that's out there in their National School Climates Report. And so to say that these clubs would do more harm than good, that's ridiculous. They actually save lives. They provide that space for LGBT students and allies to have the conversations that they need to have to develop the support networks that they need to develop in order to feel safe. So yeah, Gay Straight Alliances, we're still fighting against them apparently in one county in Tennessee. So that's what's happening there. Let's turn to Texas. Dallas's transgender-inclusive civil rights ordinance could be facing a challenge like the one that brought down Houston's. A group of conservative ministers plan to meet privately this week to discuss how to fight the ordinance. The group, they are called the U.S. Pastor Council. They grew out of the Houston Area Pastor Council, which helped force a public referendum on the Houston Equal Rights Ordinance, resulting in voters repealing that ordinance, the HERO Ordinance, last November. And it wasn't just repealed, it was soundly defeated. As with the Houston Ordinance, the pastors are casting the Dallas Ordinance as a, quote, bathrooms bill. They say that by allowing transgender people to use the sex-segregated facilities matching their gender identity, it will enable men masquerading as women to attack women and girls in restrooms and locker rooms, something that, just to remind you all, in reality, has never, ever, ever happened as a result of trans-inclusive public accommodations laws. It has never happened. There has never been a trans-inclusive public accommodation law that enabled men to masquerade as women to attack women and girls in restrooms and locker rooms. It's just something that's enabling people to be able to use a restroom. That's what it's for. Dave Welch of the Pastor Council said this, quote, "This threat of personal safety and privacy against women will also criminalize Christian business owners in the same threat we're trying to address." That was his quote. I don't know that he's been coached too much on PR because, again, this is what he said. The threat of personal safety and privacy against women will also criminalize Christian business owners is the same threat we're trying to address. Huh. The Dallas Ordinance, which the City Council updated in November, bans discrimination based on gender identity in employment, housing, and public accommodations. The city previously considered gender identity to be covered under sexual orientation, which was added to the ordinance in 2002. But since the two characteristics are different, a local LGBT group recommended that the council revise the language. There was no organized opposition before the Dallas Council took its votes, but the opposition has organized retroactively. And again, our friend Texas Lieutenant Governor Dan Patrick, because this is what he has time to do, has weighed in yet again. Texas Lieutenant Governor Dan Patrick and Houston anti-LGBT activist Jared Woodfill denounced the Dallas ordinance soon after its passage, and now the pastors are coming at it in full force. Dave Welch from that pastor's council went on to say this, quote, "It's just another in the latest sequence across the nation being implemented by the Human Rights Council and radical LGBT movement, forcing LGBT regulations on the local community. Often because we simply have not paid attention to who we put in office at the city level. They're too easily manipulated by emotional rhetoric. It's time to stand up and turn back to Judeo-Christian framework, morality, and law." A fight on their hands in Dallas. I don't know. They were pretty effective there in Houston in soundly defeating it. And by the way, this is not the only bill of its kind that's being considered. In Florida, a bill to offer LGBT Floridians protection against workplace discrimination is to come up for another vote this week in a state Senate committee meeting after conservatives raised hackles about how, in the words of one Republican lawmaker, here it is, folks, quote, "You could have a lot of weirdos doing weird things in bathrooms." Quote, "You could have a lot of weirdos doing weird things in bathrooms." The bill is the first in a decade to even reach a vote in the Senate Judiciary Committee, which deadlocked 6-6 on this bill this week following a contentious debate. Lawmakers engaged in 2 hours of heated debate, tossing around such phrases as, quote, "anatomical male" and "male parts," which are not in any way mentioned in the bill at all. The bill says nothing about anatomical males and male parts. The bill would ban, this is what it's meant to do, the bill would ban employment discrimination. That's what it's trying to do. Ban employment discrimination on the basis of sexual orientation or gender identity. The bill has the support of numerous large corporations, which see it as beneficial to Florida's business climate. Republican Senator Jeff Brandes just kept asking over and over. I'm telling you, this is what some of our lawmakers are doing. Republican Senator Jeff Brandes asked over and over, quote, "This bill would allow an anatomical male to undress as a public accommodation in a gymnasium?" Over and over, he kept asking it. Carlos Guillermo Smith, a lobbyist for Equality Florida and a Democratic candidate for the state legislature, said this, quote, "The purpose and the spirit of this bill is that gay and transgender people have equal access to public accommodations." That's it. That's all it is. Supporters of the bill said the bathroom discussion distracted lawmakers from that purpose. Bill sponsor Senator Joe Abruzzo said this, quote, "Right now, under Florida law, you can say to an employee, 'We're going to fire you because you are gay.' That is legal." So that's what needs to change there in Florida. Very similar to what's happening in Texas. We're going to see these bills pop up over and over again. More bills, more legislation that's being considered. An amendment to a bill that would have extended civil rights protections to LGBT Georgians there in the great state of Georgia. It was defeated this week. That bill, which protects against discrimination on the basis of religion, race, color, and national origin, is still alive and being taken up today by the full House Judiciary Committee. The defeated amendment to HB 849 sought to protect people from discrimination on the basis of sexual orientation, gender identity, sex, disability, age, or veteran status. Even without these characteristics being added to Bill HB 849, the measure is designed so that Georgia's law more closely mirrors existing federal statutes. The bill would protect Georgians against discrimination on the basis of race, color, religion, or natural origin in hotels, restaurants, theaters, and other public accommodations. If signed into law, the bill would allow Georgians to sue for discriminatory practices in state court. According to the Journal Constitution, a newspaper there in Georgia, protections for LGBT people would have passed if lawmakers who were not members of the subcommittee did not use their influence on subcommittee members. That article said this, quote, "The 6-4 vote only occurred with outside help. Two of those no votes came from State Representatives Barry Fleming and Joe Wilkinson, who are members of the Judiciary Committee, but not this particular subcommittee. The final vote against the amendment came from the House Majority Whip Matt Ramsey. Without those votes, the amendment would have passed 4-3. So a lot of outside influence, a lot of people fighting against being more inclusive. And it's not just in Texas. It's not just in Florida. It's not just in Georgia. There's a lot happening feel like we talk about it every week. It's the state on all our minds. It's Indiana. The Indiana Senate actually this time, though, has passed hate crimes legislation. Senate Bill 220, which would require harsher punishments for those who commit crimes rooted in prejudice, it will now be debated in the state's House of Representatives. Representative Randy Truitt, who is a sponsor of the bill, said this, quote, "Our job is to protect those who need to be protected." If passed, the legislation would give judges the choice to impose harsher sentences when factors like gender, race, disability, religion, sexual orientation, or gender identity are motivators in lawbreaking. Indiana is one of five U.S. states that still does not have some form of hate crimes law, which different incarnations have been debated in Indiana for the past 15 years, but none have ever been passed. The bill's long-awaited approval comes in the wake of another defeat, SB 344, which was killed last week in the Senate. And although it was flawed, and we talked about this on last week's show, the latter bill would have banned discrimination against LGBT people statewide. But we will see if this hate crimes law will actually go through. The Senate has passed it. Now it's going to go to the House of Representatives. We will keep our eye on Indiana. They might finally pass some hate crimes legislation. On the national front, and I gave a little bit of a shout-out to this at the start of this segment, Republican presidential hopeful Marco Rubio, in an exchange with a gay New Hampshire resident this week, showed a lack of historical knowledge and got accused of wanting to put LGBT people back in the closet. Rubio was campaigning at the Puritan Backroom Diner in Manchester, New Hampshire, where Timothy Kierstad asked him, quote, "Why do you want to put me back in the closet?" Marco Rubio responded, quote, "I don't. You can live any way you want." Kierstad then pointed out that he's a gay man in a same-sex marriage and said Rubio's opposition to equal marriage rights shows the U.S. senator from Florida thinks that gay people don't matter. Rubio then responded, quote, "No, I just believe marriage is between one man and one woman." When Kierstad said, "That's your belief," and noted that half the nation disagrees, Rubio replied this, quote, "I think that's what the law should be, and if you don't agree, you should have the law changed by a legislature." As Rubio prepared to move on from this uncomfortable conversation, Kierstad noted that the law already has changed. He could have been referring, this is the advocate wondering, he could have been referring to the U.S. Supreme Court's marriage equality decision last year, or to the fact that New Hampshire's marriage law was indeed changed by its legislature to include same-sex couples. It was way back in 2009. And in 2012, the New Hampshire legislature rejected an effort to repeal marriage equality. Kierstad told reporters afterwards that he's a Manchester restaurant owner, a father of three, and a registered independent voter. He said he will vote in the Democratic primary this week because of Republican opposition to marriage equality. He said this, quote, "They want to take my rights away as a citizen of the United States." And this, by the way, this is not the only gay-related conversation Marco Rubio had in that diner. It's quite a hopping place for gay conversations there from Marco Rubio in that diner. Another patron asked him if U.S. Senator Lindsey Graham of South Carolina, who recently dropped out of the Republican presidential race, is gay. Rubio chuckled and said no. What an odd exchange. What a very odd exchange. The Human Rights Campaign, in a blog post about Rubio's exchange with Kierstad, stressed that Rubio is staunchly opposed to LGBT rights. Marco Rubio has said that he would appoint Supreme Court justices who would reverse the marriage equality ruling, and he voiced support for the First Amendment Defense Act, which would allow broad exemptions from anti-discrimination laws if the discrimination is based on religious or moral objections to same-sex marriage. So there you go. In the Puritan Backroom Diner, that's the name of the diner, the Puritan Backroom Diner there in Manchester, New Hampshire, you can have all sorts of gay conversations. They're happening with Marco Rubio. You can go there too. Let's increase their traffic. In South Dakota, I can't think of a time that we've ever talked about South Dakota on this show, but in South Dakota, the audience audibly gasped at what one South Dakota state senator said in support of another bathroom bill. These bathroom bills are everywhere. Republican state senator David Omdahl of Sioux Falls was taking part in a regular legislative coffee breakfast meeting with constituents when the bathroom bill was raised by opponents in attendance. He backs the bill, which would ban transgender people from using the bathroom that coincides with their gender identity. By the way, so this is not a bill that's meant to offer more protections. This is actually a bill that's trying to outright ban people from using a bathroom that coincides with their gender identity. So he said this. This is South Dakota State Senator David Omdahl of Sioux Falls. He said this, quote, "This is definitely a good bill. What's this about? This is about protecting our children. I'm sorry if you're so twisted that you don't know who you are." Then the audience gasped and they were told to quiet down. This is what he said. He said, "This is definitely a good bill. What's this about? This is about protecting our children. I'm sorry if you're so twisted you don't know who you are." He then went on. He said, "I'm telling you right now, it's about protecting the kids. I don't even understand where our society is these days. You know, I look at what's going on in the military, etc. They're treating the wrong part of the anatomy. They ought to be treating it up here," he gestured to his head. "So yeah, my feeling is let's protect the children. Let's get this bill passed to save our kids." So there you go. More fear-mongering and just a total lack of understanding about gender expression, gender identity, really, at all. TV station KSFY caught up with people at the meeting, including the county Democratic chair, Heather Halverson, who called the comments offensive and appalling. Kendra Heathscott, a trans woman and member of the Center for Equality, said Omdahl's comments promote bullying and misunderstanding of trans people, who she says, quote, "may be struggling with depression because of comments like this." That is Republican State Senator David Omdahl of Sioux Falls, South Dakota, who says, quote, "I'm sorry if you're so twisted you don't know who you are." Huh. In the state of Maine, gosh, these are not happy stories this week. It's not going well legislatively for our LGBTQ brothers and sisters. Maine's Republican governor has now blocked the state's Department of Education and Human Rights Commission from issuing legally binding rules that would guarantee transgender student equal access. Instead, schools statewide will be encouraged to abide by, quote, guidelines. So we went from rules to guidelines about how to treat transgender students, but they will not face penalties for failing to comply with these suggestions. The formal rules were drafted by the Maine Human Rights Commission and the Department of Education in response to a 2014 ruling from Maine's High Court in the case of Nicole Maines, a transgender student who was denied access to the girls' bathroom at her elementary school. With the support of the state's Human Rights Commission, the rules would have established a legal standard for trans students statewide, affirming that they have the right to access the gender-segregated facilities and sports teams that correspond with their gender. But a spokeswoman for Governor Paul LePage told the Associated Press the governor has read the ruling, and he believes that it requires the state legislature to take action on the issue, not the executive branch. Advocates of equal access for trans students say the governor is misinterpreting that landmark ruling. This is a quote from Representative Mathea Daughtry, a Republican representing Brunswick. She said this, quote, "The governor is violating the law by refusing to let the rulemaking go forward. He's putting our students at risk." So that is happening in Maine. Gosh, are there any good stories out there? Here's one. I found one. Here we go. Somewhat good. Trying to therapeutically convert your gay and lesbian son or daughter to straight is going to get a lot more rare in New York. In New York is doing good things thanks to an executive action this week from Governor Andrew Cuomo. Although a growing number of states have passed a ban on so-called conversion therapy for minors through the legislature, the idea has stalled out in New York, where the Republican-controlled Senate hasn't brought it to a vote, despite the Democratic-controlled Assembly having passed the legislation. But Governor Cuomo said this, quote, "We will not allow the misguided and the intolerant to punish LGBT young people for simply being who they are." He called reparative therapy a, quote, "hateful and fundamentally flawed practice." The new regulations that he has issued span multiple agencies. The New York State Department of Financial Services will ban insurance companies from covering conversion therapy for minors, and the state's Medicaid plan won't cover it either, making it more costly for a parent who wants to try converting their kid, something all major mental health organizations agree is damaging and impossible. I have said this so many times on the show, but let's repeat it again. Conversion therapy not only does not work, okay, so it doesn't work, but it also does harm. So on the one hand, it doesn't work, it doesn't convert people in any way, and on the other hand, it actually does harm. So this is the first time that any U.S. governor has acted independently of the legislature to address the problem of conversion therapy, though other governors could follow Cuomo's example. Laws banning conversion therapy are in place in New Jersey, California, Oregon, Illinois, and the District of Columbia. Those are the only places. So these protections now in New York, New Jersey, California, Oregon, and Illinois, and also Washington, D.C. So 5 of the 50 states, or 6 of the 51 if you count D.C. 5 of the 50 states, those are the only places where conversion therapy that has been proven to do damage has been banned. So much more work to do. Last but not least, a new study has found that encouraging the belief that some people are born gay may not be the most effective way to address and reduce homophobia. In a new paper published in the Journal of Counseling Psychology, researchers concluded that although a large number of college students may believe people are born gay, they also believe that this makes them fundamentally different. Researchers say that those who took part in the study agreed that sexuality is a natural phenomena. They also believe that being gay makes you completely different than being bi or being straight. These beliefs may in turn encourage prejudice and discrimination. Professor Patrick Grzanka said this, quote, "We found that people who are high in all four of these beliefs were more likely to be straight, and that people high in all four of these beliefs were more likely to be homophobic." Susanna Walters, the author of The Tolerance Trap, added that if history is anything to go by, the born this way argument could do more harm than good. She said this, quote, "Historically, biological arguments for identity are largely used in the service of quite heinous political movements like slavery, the Holocaust, and the history of racism." So the born this way belief may not be the most effective. I encourage you to go read that report. You can really find it anywhere online right now. And that is it for our tour of the news. Not the happiest news this week. A lot going on in Texas and in Florida and Indiana and in Georgia. Some good things happening in New York, but some not great things happening in Maine. It all goes to show there is so much work to be done. You guys got to get out there and help out. You have to use your voice in the way that you know how to use it to make a difference for your LGBT and ally brothers and sisters. Whether you are rebranding your gay effort as a queer effort to be more inclusive, whether you're hosting a radio show or penning a letter to the editor, whatever it is that you need to do to use your voice to lift up the voices of your LGBTQ and ally brothers and sisters, get out there and do it. And while you're out there using your voice, while you're out there making a difference, please remember, why be gay when you can be so gay?
Everybody got pain, aching in their heart. They got pain, aching in their heart. So don't hold back, cry out loud. Share it with a neighbor when you feel low down. The truth shall set you free, set you free. Trouble in their heart. Don't hold back. Whisper in my ear. Share it with a neighbor. Watch it disappear.